This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy that I am back in the studio for the first time in weeks, because although I was having fun being able to broadcast from a remote location. One time in a closet, one time in my library. It's actually a laundry room that I turned into a library because I have thousands of books in my house and I needed to expand. One time in the bathroom because it was the quietest room at the time. But then the next door neighbors decided, I don't know, they're like rebuilding their whole condo. They are banging and slamming over there all the time. I don't know what they're doing. I think they're doing some home remodeling. I hope it's not going to turn out to be a disaster because they don't have any workers coming in. They're doing it themselves. And then last week, I actually broadcast from my kitchen, which turned out to be the best place. I have a new, absolutely wonderful new dishwasher. And I'm so, like, I am broadcasting, and my dishwasher is going, and it's a whisper silent. It was absolutely fantastic. Now, I'll talk about that later, but right now, I am going to interview somebody who I'm so excited about this interview because I really need, oh, don't we all? I need a laugh. And this author, you know, I always, as you know, I love to read, and I love to read every type of book. I will read thrillers. I will read, women's fiction. But when every once in a while I get a book that just makes me laugh out loud, and when that happens, it is such a thrill for me. And right now at this time, because I'm afraid, I keep thinking that, you know, a year from now, every book I get will be about this horrible, horrible period. Not the roaring 20s. I don't know what we're going to call these 20s. This has been bad. But we do have the opportunity sometimes to write a book that stirs people's hearts, that makes them smile. And when that happens, it is just a wonderful, wonderful, I can't tell you how much fun it is. So to have Carlos Hernandez on the phone with me today, because it is my first day back in the studio, I am so thrilled. Hi, Carlos.
Hello there. Hi.
Well, you know, I've been recording from remote locations for the past few weeks, and so it's a real honor to talk to you, because there are very few authors that make me laugh out loud, and you do it. I tell you, you are so great. And everyone, I wish everyone in America would just take time to read your two books. Sal and Gabby, the new book is called Sal and Gabby, Fix the Universe. And this is number two in a two-book series, not a big series. The first one, they broke the universe, and now they fix the universe.
I mean, you read the book, but you know they kind of don't fix the universe in the second one. They just kind of mess it up some more. But you know, how to give it a title?
Well, you know, I'm hoping. I tell you, they have to come back. when I read, you know, two of two, I said, "You're crazy. This is like, this should be two of 200." You know, I can go on and on and on with these characters. They are so good. They are. You have done this magic. You're just such a talented author. You are able
Thank you so much.
You are able to put a person in right in the action. And I have to go back to book one because when I'm in the studio and I'm surrounded by all sorts of cleaning stuff, you know, I'm spraying everything I'm doing. And I go back to that chicken, the chicken. it is so funny. And anyone who reads that scene, and you know, right now people are not laughing a heck of a lot, but if they go back and read that scene, it is one of the most brilliant openings to any book of any type that I've ever read.
Oh, well, thank you. It's one of the reasons there's a kind of reprise that happens in Fix the Universe where Sal finally gets to say the line at the end of chapter one that was sort of like only in his thoughts before, you know. So, you know, I thought people might want that, and I want to give people what they want.
Well, you certainly do, and it is wonderful, brilliant writing, and at the same time, you bring in so many important and touch upon so many important aspects. Let's go back a little bit to book one. Let's talk about where Sal arrived and why he arrived and what's the story behind it. And then we'll get on to all of the new things in the new book.
Sure. So, you know, when Sal is 8 years old, he loses his mother. His mother dies. And he simply cannot abide a universe without his beloved mother. And so he discovers within him, through force of will, the power to be able to look into different universes where his mother is still alive. Only she's not exactly the same person, because in different universes, there are different influences, different environmental factors. She's just a different person in those different universes. And so every time he tries to drag a woman who kind of looks like his mother into this universe, disaster ensues. Well, so he's been dealing with this for 5 years, and he still hasn't figured out how exactly he needs to proceed. This is when he meets Gabby Real, who's the only other person who's ever been able to see the rips in space-time that he's able to make in the fabric of the cosmos. And together, they start bantering back and forth and thinking about what they should be doing. And Gabby has a sick brother who really could use a little help from the multiverse if Sal is willing to give it. And they pick their way through towards a kind of way where they think they might have done the right thing for this moment in this time, even though they didn't have all the information.
Well, we'll explain that Sal arrives in Miami. He's just starting in a new school. Tell us about this school which you've created.
So the Guleco Academy for the Arts is basically a magnet school for kids who are going into theater or costuming or all of these artistic endeavors. Sal was there because he's training to be a magician, and he's already pretty darn good, even without his universe-poking capabilities. And so he is there because he considers himself a showman. He refers to himself often as a showman and likes to put on a show. And so he also likes to be in control. And so that magician aspect feeds into the fact that he's also a type 1 diabetic. And it also feeds into the fact that he must control even the whole universe and make it do what he wants it to do. So he shows up at the Guleco Academy of Arts in that way.
And, of course, as he explains, even at a school that, you know, is really prestigious, there is always going to be a bully around. And this is so funny. No matter what you do, you can't get rid of them. They are somehow always around. And when this Yasmani, I crack up. I'm sorry. You just are so funny. So he right away, you know, right off the bat, you start this off with a bully. And of course, I think that's a wonderful lesson for all the readers that, yeah, we're going to learn something here, that bullying isn't so good. And oh boy, how Sal manages it. It's so brilliant. When I read it the first time, I read it once and I thought, oh, this guy, you know, I said, oh, Carlos Hernandez is like, what? I hadn't heard of you at the time when I read the first book. And I thought, this is incredible. You should be everywhere. Everybody should be reading you because just for that one, I would actually, I'm telling you out there, people, like, you know, in the big publishing world, newspaper world, just take this first chapter and put it on the front page. That's why I New York Times and Tampa, whatever the newspaper, they keep changing the name. Just put this first chapter on the front page because in so many ways it tells so much about the world that we're living in. We don't need bullies, but when we do have bullies, we need somebody like Sal. We don't need, you know, just to have this power that you have in Sal is, and the understanding, you know, having the diabetes. This is important that people understand that we can overcome everything. And boy, and you can do it with humor.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that happens is Yasmani evolves. You know, he doesn't stay a bully because, you know, bullies come from places and they are made by their environments as well. And so, you know, one of the things that I thought was important to do was to humanize Yasmani after that first thing. And a friendship then starts to grow with Sal and Gabby and Yasmani. And they become a kind of trifecta of power between them that's even more developed in Fix the Universe.
You know, when Sal says, when Yasmani says, time to die. And Sal says, like the dead chicken in your locker. I think, where did this come from? What Carlos, you are such a special person.
Well, that's one way to put it. It's the sort of thing where it's like that the only motive there was to make people laugh. So I'm glad it worked for you.
It worked. And even now, when I think of a locker, I think of, is there a dead chicken in that locker? It's so clever. And I want to, you know, let's mention here a little bit about Rick Riordan, because, you know, he is himself a brilliant writer. And now as a publisher and bringing out so many wonderful authors, I know that, I don't know if he discovered you, how he discovered you, but Rick Riordan is, to my mind, one of the best, certainly one of the best authors for young people with his Percy Jackson and the Olympian series.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, and so he's got Magnus Chase and the Trials of Apollo. He just has a new book out today that has to do with Jupiter. I think there are a couple things to say there. First, you know, I read Rick, you know, more than a decade ago out loud. You know, I just read the first five books of the Percy Jackson series out loud just because they were just so delightful. And you're right, I was discovered by Rick. And what I've been telling people is that I don't get to win Lotto anymore. I used up all my luck by being discovered by Rick Riordan, who pulled my grown-up book of short stories out of the ether for some reason, decided to read it, liked it, and then showed it to his editor. And from there, I was brought into the Rick Riordan Presents fold. But let me tell you, this imprint is doing such important work. Rick was being asked constantly, can you write about Indian mythology or, you know, the Maya mythology or all these other world mythologies? And he just said, those aren't my stories to tell. Let me find people to whom I can give the opportunity to write. And so, you know, that's how we got Arusha and Stormrunner and all the books that are forthcoming as well. It is just, to me, he just did it all right. He did it all just the way it should have been done, where he's writing his own great books and inspiring people and then giving an opportunity for writers to tell their own mythologies and their own stories.
Well, I think Rick Riordan is, what I love about his books, I personally find them more fascinating than the Harry Potter books. I just really enjoy them so much. And there's so much depth to them. that, you know, I think he's a fantastic author. And you're right, he has this eye, he knows what's great. Well, he's won so many awards, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I would need an hour just to list all the awards he's won. So that he discovered you and that he has nurtured you, and now that he has to tell you to write some more books. this cannot be the end. I cannot give this up. I'm sure you're actually working on working on more Sal and Gabby books, aren't you?
Well, what I would say is I wrote it as a duology, you know, so that this unit is complete. But there might be other things in the work that I wouldn't be allowed to talk about because I don't want to anger them out. You know, when Disney, you want to make sure that you follow the rules. What I will say, though, is I'll be writing other things as well. And right now I started a new novel that's not Sal and Gabby that might fall betwixt and between any other Sal and Gabby books that I might do.
Well, I'm telling you, everybody, really, if they would just put this first chapter of the first book on the front page of every newspaper in the country, just for one day. That's what they should do. We need something out there to really make people believe again. Believe, and let's talk about this multiverse that you've created, because it's not a universe, it's a multiverse. And I think that multiverse is exactly what Sal wanted. He wanted hope, and we need that hope. And so if I wish everyone across the country could read this first chapter simply because you sit back and you say, first of all, the idea of believing in something is great. But then what you've created, this joy, I call my program Joy on Paper, and you have this joy. So tell us about the multiverse a little bit more. Tell us more about Gabby and about book two, because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and joy really is a motivating factor. You know, one of the things that I wanted to do in depicting the multicultural experience that I had as a Cuban-American was, you know, there's plenty of suffering to go around in the immigrant experience, and there are so many stories of woe that are true and need to be told. But one of the things that gets told less is the fact that there's so much joy in that experience as well, and there's so much of interest in the hybridity that comes from having multiple perspectives brought by multiple cultures is, you know, one of the places where real excitement and joy can come from. That was my experience growing up, too. And so I wanted to depict that. And so I hope that people will feel that the Sal and Gabby stories are raucous and wild and full of exuberance the way they are. And I think nobody exemplifies that more than Gabby, actually. Gabby is indefatigable, and she believes in rights, and she wants to do the right thing and is unafraid and courageous to go after what she believes is right. And, you know, so she's extremely smart, and she comes from a great family, a found family mostly. You know, it's a family that has chosen to be together. One of the most important things, I think, is making sure that kids know that whatever their families look like, those are families. They count as families. And, you know, I want people to feel good about the people in their lives who are doing the work to help them grow up happy and strong, whatever that family composition might look like. And so Gabby is representative of that. And so, you know, she comes from that background. And it's her sort of like certainty and her aggressiveness that gives Sal sort of like that intellectual equal to chafe against that allow them together to both grow quicker than they've ever grown before.
Well, you've created it in these two books, and I'm sure I know that there are going to be many more, because we cannot lose these characters. Because they're not characters. To me, they're real. I mean, I feel they're not characters. When you create something so perfect, they're real people to me. And I love them both. I love Sal. Every time I think of it, there are so many lines in there. There are so many wonderful, wonderful things. And so much, you know, just brilliant philosophy of life philosophy in there. And what you touch upon a couple of things. I just want to quickly mention the first of all, you mentioned there that, you know, the difference in skin color, even in the Cubans, that there's different skin colors. And somebody who's darker might, you know, look down on somebody who's lighter. Somebody who's lighter might look down on somebody darker. And that happens in the black community. It happens in, not so much in the white community. Although, you know, it's funny. In England, you know, they still are against people with red hair. They call them gingers. And they, I mean, get over it, people. It's 2020. We've gone through a pandemic. Get over all this nonsense. We're all humans, and we all are suffering in the same way, and we all have the same hopes and dreams for a better world. And it's up to us, and writers like you can inspire people just to be better. I think by having Sal have diabetes, it makes him more human, more, you know, he's vulnerable, and yet he overcomes this. So I think you've done a brilliant job here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. The diabetes was important partially because the Latinx community is the community that has the fastest growing rates of both type 2 and type 1 diabetes. And so one of the reasons I wanted to make Sal diabetic was as a wake-up call to let people know that this is a real issue that's happening right now and that Latinos and Latinas are underdiagnosed when it comes to diabetes.
Well, you've done that, and you've done so much more. I think that really, I of all the authors I've talked to in the past, you know, 5 years, I've been doing this program for 5 years, and they all have messages, and they all have things that they want to tell people and to give them hope. And sometimes they're about diseases, sometimes they're about tragedies. Everybody out there, please, please, be joyful. Just find the joy in life. Somebody like Carlos Hernandez has written a book that is filled with joy and very thoughtful, thought-provoking ideas. I just want to thank you, Carlos. I'm really honored to talk to you. Of all the authors I've talked to, I'm just telling you, I'm so honored to talk to you. And I'm going to invite Rick Riordan to come on. It's his birthday in June, and I hope he will come on to talk about his books. But meanwhile, do you have a web page that you want people to go to?
Probably it's best to have people follow me on Twitter. At Write Teach Play. That's WRITE, Write Teach Play. Just the easiest way to find me, I think.
Okay, you sound like a Twitter kind of guy.
Yeah.
and people should follow you, and I hope that all of my listeners out there, I don't care how old you are, if you think, you know, you're too old for a book like this, you're not, you're absolutely not, because to read the Sal and Gabby books will make you a better person. And I want to thank you so much, Carlos, for being on today. It's been an honor, and I hope you'll come back. I'd like to talk to you more. You know, this pandemic and everything has created a tight situation. We have to sort of move faster, and I probably want to get out of the studio earlier. But I just want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful.
Okay. You take care of yourself and everybody out there, okay?
Yeah, you take care, too.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Wow. Oh, I'm telling you, really, get his books. You know, sometimes an author just deserves recognition, and this guy deserves it. He's really, really wonderful. And as I said, you could be 80 years old and read his books. I just want to say a special hello to my sister out there, Natalie, who is listening in today. She is a connoisseur of cozy fiction, and my son, who came down from Madison, Wisconsin. But we're going to do a quick commercial, and then we're going to come back to my next interview.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am so happy. I am sitting here in the studio in front of my beautiful microphone. I love it so much. I'd love to be here in the studio. And I am thrilled that I have on the phone today an author whose work not only do I admire, but I actually look at her words every day. So I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Jamie Brenner, and we're going to be talking about her newest book, Summer Longing. Hi, Jamie.
Patsy, hi. I am so thrilled that you are broadcasting live still. What a valuable thing to have these days. So thank you for being in the studio.
Yeah, well, I'm thrilled. You know, I was broadcasting for 3 weeks in remote locations in my house, all around my house. Different rooms. I was trying to find the quietest room. So it's really thrilling to be back in the studio today. But I wanted to tell people that one of the things I have over my desk, right above my desk, is something that you wrote, because I was so impressed with a sign that one of your characters made in the Husband Hour. And so I just want to read that. And I think it sets a place and sets a tone for the story that is in your new book, Summer Longing. But here's a quote from Jamie Brenner. And this, I told you at the time, I thought you should make this into a bookmark and hand it out to people. I'm going to read it, okay? A child will make love stronger, day shorter, home happier, clothes shabbier, and the past forgotten, and the future worth living for. That is such a wonderful, wonderful idea. And I just want to say, you know, I'm so thrilled with the new book.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. And, you know, it means a lot to me. This is our third conversation together.
Uh-huh.
I cannot believe time flies like that.
It does. Wow. The new book, and we're talking about a child. Let's talk about what a wonderful idea you got for the book. So tell us about Summer Longing. Tell us about, you know, it's always so exciting when a new character comes into your life. And I found Ruth Cooperman a fascinating character. So tell us about Ruth. Tell us about this return to Provincetown. And about this wonderful news, they call it summer reading, although I think year-round, but it is ideal for taking to the beach, and it's got a beautiful cover that is on the beach. So tell us about Ruth and about the new book.
Sure. Well, like you said, it's a return to Provincetown, which was the setting for my novel, The Forever Summer. And, you know, I'd originally intended to set my books in different beach towns every year, but I just fell so in love with Provincetown, and readers emailed me and messaged me asking for what happened to the characters and will you ever do a sequel. So Summer Longing is not a sequel technically, but it is a return to the town. And there are some recurring characters, which you'll recognize if you've read Summer Longing. But for the, I mean, Summer, The Forever Summer. If you've not, though, it's completely a standalone novel. And it's the story of a woman, as you mentioned, named Ruth Cooperman, who comes to Provincetown intending to retire and have her, what some people call, me time. Just herself. She sold her business. Her daughter's grown. She is divorced, and she's looking for the perfect forever home for this stage in her life. And she's not able to buy a house yet because real estate is hard to come by peak season, so she's renting a home for the summer. While she is looking forward to complete solitude, before she can even unpack her suitcase, she finds her first day in town that someone has left a baby girl on her front porch. And this is not a welcome surprise, but what this discovery does, it draws Ruth into sort of a mystery in the town, and it draws her into the lives of her neighbors. Some of these quirky characters are people you'll recognize if you read The Forever Summer. But most importantly, what it does is it prompts Ruth to reconnect with her own estranged daughter. And what I wanted to do with Summer Longing was sort of celebrate and explore motherhood in all of its forms. You know, being the parent of a grown child, being the mother of a newborn, not being a parent but wanting to be. And that was sort of the theme that I started with when I began writing this book.
Well, as you said, sometimes characters or places do take over your mind. They become so part of you that you don't want to give them up. And I think you've done a great thing in taking us back to Provincetown. I love it. I was there quite a few times. As a matter of fact, I can look at the books, some of the books on my bookshelf, and I know which ones I bought there because they have wonderful open markets, don't they?
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, Provincetown, you know, it makes you want to read. It makes you want to write. There's so many. There's two bookstores I love there, Provincetown Bookshop and East End Books. It really, I leave town every time with a bag full of things to read.
And it's just, it is a very, very special, place. So when you take us back here and to tell us about, you know, it's a strange thing to find a baby, as a matter of fact, I've been talking to people who are in this pandemic mode, and they will say they're stuck in the house with a baby, and I think I wish somebody put a baby outside my door. I love it.
It's a litmus test in some ways for, you know, how people. First of all, I think no one knows how they're going to respond to motherhood until they are in the situation. It was certainly, I thought I was prepared to become a mother, but I wasn't completely. I think when you become a mother, it changes the way you look at your own mother. Like, it gives you a different perspective. And I think that's part of what I wanted to explore with Ruth and her daughter. I think you can be judgmental, or you have your issues with your parents, but then when you become a parent, you can look back and say, oh, I can see why this happened, or, you know, I'm not perfect, so I guess my parents did their best. And I wanted this perspective, both through the eyes of the mother, Ruth, and through her daughter, Olivia, to unfold over the course of the summer. And this baby, this sort of mystery baby who no one knows who the parents are throughout the book, was really the sort of the antagonist to kind of bring everyone's deep-seated feelings about their own family relationships to the surface.
Well, the relationship between Ruth and Olivia is really fascinating. Now, Olivia isn't she's driven also in her work, in her, just like her mother was. And coming down and to spend the weekend with her mother just changes their lives.
Yeah, well, the book, you know, when you write a book, you characters start in one place, you know, when you begin the novel. And ideally, over the course of the story, the characters change and grow when they're faced with obstacles. And Olivia, her unresolved issue in life has always been feeling neglected by her mother. And I think women are often in a lose-lose situation. You know, if you're home with your children, you feel like you're not, you know, you're giving up your career, or maybe you don't have the financial independence or leverage you would like. If you're working, you feel like you're not with your kids. And it's really, really difficult. So I think children grow up and they either want to mimic what their mother did, like, I want to be a stay-at-home mom too, or I want to work as well. For Olivia, it was a little of both. She said, I'm going to be a career woman like my mother, but I'm not going to make the same mistake she made by thinking I could have it all. I'm never going to have children. And this is something she has to grapple with over the course of the book, that even as she's maybe trying to find forgiveness with her mother, she still has to decide what course she wants to take in her own life in terms of becoming a parent or not.
Well, in terms of, you know, this is categorized as women's fiction, but I think the fact that the baby is the mystery in the story makes it also very suspenseful.
Thank you. When I first wrote the book and my first people were reading it, I would ask them, you know, did you guess at any point? Did you know? And luckily, no one said that they knew. So I'm glad that you found that it unfolded suspensefully. It was challenging. I knew that I wanted to have this baby to provoke certain reactions in the characters. We have Ruth, who I mentioned, with the grown daughter. We also have two women who own not only the house that Ruth is renting, but also the tea shop in town, Fern and Elise. And this is a couple who had struggled to have a child of their own, but were unsuccessful. And the appearance of this baby is very provocative to them. The tea shop is inspired by a place I really fell in love with in Provincetown called the Captain's Daughters. And I'd always been a major coffee drinker, but this place is so phenomenal with its custom blend teas that it converted me into including tea into my caffeine repertoire. So if anyone goes to Provincetown, you have to check out the Captain's Daughters. So those were between Olivia and then Fern and Elise and Ruth. We have three very different perspectives and attitudes towards motherhood.
And I think particularly touching is Elise. You know, she's gone through IVF and miscarriages, and I always find her such a character that I really care about.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've always been, I feel deeply for people who struggle to conceive and have children. And I think, I mean, not only is it difficult to want something so badly and not be able to have it, but I think about the strain that it puts on a relationship, on a marriage. And in this case, we have two women who are dealing with the loss of the family they imagined in different ways. Fern is very practical, and she says, look, we tried, it didn't work out, we need to move on. And Elise is not able to let it go, and she finds her partner's ability to just turn her attention to other things almost as an emotional betrayal. And when this baby appears in town, it just reopens those wounds.
And we should perhaps mention Ben. Let's talk a little bit about Ben.
Yes. So not only does Ruth have her grown daughter, come to town, but she has a visit from her ex-husband, Ben, Olivia's father. And this stirs up some, ambivalent feelings on her part. She had been the one to end the marriage. It had been the right decision at the time.
Because she wanted a career. She wanted to be...
She wanted a career, and I think this is something that in modern days, couples struggle with. When a woman earns more money than a man or has a bigger career than a man, it can be challenging. It's challenging, I think, for men to not feel diminished by this. Sometimes I think women feel resentful because they're kind of stuck in the old way of thinking that the man has to be the provider. Even under the best of circumstances, it's a balancing act to maintain your marriage, parenthood, a career, a business in this case. So Ruth had come to town with all of this behind her, and before the summer even hits the midway point, all of these things are back right in front of her. And it is the drama of the book is how she slowly tries to resolve the things that she's now faced with. And I think in life we sometimes tell ourselves, oh, the past is the past, you know, none of this really matters anymore. But I find that nothing is ever fully gone. I come back to this quote all the time. Margaret Atwood wrote in the beginning of the book, Cat's Eye, that time is not linear, that it's more like a pool of water that you can look down and see all the layers. And I think that's really beautiful and really true.
Well, I think your book is really beautiful and true, and it's called Summer Longing. Summer Longing is a wonderful book, and ideal for any time of the year, but with this beautiful cover, definitely for summer reading. And that brings us to, how are you doing? Because my listeners are always interested in how the authors are doing. And now, of course, where are you? You are in New York?
I left New York, actually, in the beginning of March. I'm from suburban Philadelphia. And when things started getting stressful in New York, I was on a deadline for my next book. And I came to my family's home to focus on work, not even realizing how bad things were going to get. And I basically haven't gone back except to keep packing more things. So I'm very homesick right now, and I'm thinking all the time about the people in town and the frontline workers, because all those hospitals that are really at the center of this are, one of them is the place where my children were born. I've been a patient in these hospitals, so I'm thinking about it a lot. And like everyone, I think we're all just in a wait and see mode. I mean, the one positive is, as a writer, I've always worked from home, so it didn't really disrupt that. But, you know, New York, I love that town, and it's hard to see it suffering.
Oh, I love New York, and I was worried that you were there, because there are so many people who, ever since I started this program 5 years ago, I've had the wonderful opportunity of working with so many publicists who live in New York, or they, some of them work in New York, but many live, in Queens or the Bronx. And it's been so scary, and I get a lot of messages from them. And these are sort of, in the publishing world, the publicists are really unsung heroes too, because they keep contacting me constantly. Every day I'm getting emails from publicists saying, would you promote this book? Would you invite this author on? They're working through this, although they are home with their kids, in many cases, locked up. And it's not easy for them to get out. And they live in apartment buildings. It's not easy for them to get out, to do shopping. And in many cases, I know they're suffering. And I hope that all the authors out there I had a very funny, a sad sort of story from one of the publicists. She said, you know, I said something about, you know, I'd love to promote this author, and I'm so happy I got the book. And she said, well, hold on to it, because it's a first edition, and, you know, you don't get those. You know, it's going to be a valuable. She was trying to promote her author that this one is really going to be a valuable first edition. And she said, you know, I never get any. I said, what do you mean you never get it? She never gets. Authors never send her an autographed copy of their books. So she might work like crazy for an author. She's sending out email after email after email, trying to convince me and convince other people to interview an author. And it's a complete, they're completely overlooked. No author ever sends a publicist an autographed book.
That's interesting. Well, I worked in publicity. My first job in New York was as an assistant in publicity at HarperCollins. And it is a very, very difficult job under the best of circumstances, getting more difficult by the year. And other people I think about as well are the independent bookstore owners.
Oh.
And these are people who I have met so many wonderful, wonderful people over the past few summers who open their doors every day and introduce their customers one by one, hand-selling books. And I am so concerned that some might not be able to ever open their doors again. So I hope, you know, readers out there listening to this, if you do buy books during this time, you know, please consider going to bookshop.org, which a lot of independent booksellers are using as their portal to get books to their customers, or ask your local store, you know, how can I order online from you. My bookstore in Philadelphia right now, it's called Narberth Bookstore. You know, I just email her what book I want, and then someone drops it off in front of my house.
Oh.
You know, we all have to be creative, but I am very concerned about bookstores.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful suggestion, and I agree. This is what we have to do. We have to reach out to our bookstores, and just everybody... This is a time that you can read and you can have this diversion that you need from our everyday situation. And so I'm glad to hear that you're in a safe location, safe place. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper again. And you'll be back soon, I'm sure, because you're writing, you're always writing.
But I have one coming next year, and I'm hoping so much by next year. We are looking in the rearview mirror of this and having a very different conversation.
Exactly. Now, you have a webpage you want people to go to?
Yes, please. I'm at jamiebrenner.com, and I'm on Instagram at jamiebrennerwrite.
Okay. Well, Jamie, it's always an honor to talk to you. As I said, you're the only one I have up on my wall.
Oh, and, that means a lot to me, Patsy.
Because I think you touched the right chord for women's fiction. It's not, how can I say, your women's fiction is it has depth. So it's not just a sort of a fluff piece. There's depth to it, and that's why the ideas and the emotions that you create in your books stay with us. And I know that. And everybody I've talked to who have started reading your books because I talk about you, and I've used that quote when I've given speeches to writing groups, because I say, if you can have one thing in your book that people will take away, people will say, yeah, I got that. That's what you're aiming for. And so I'm really an honor to talk to you today, Jamie.
Patsy, thank you so much, and thanks for everything you're doing for all of us authors out there. We appreciate it.
Well, you take care of yourself and take care of your family. Sure. And remember, everybody, you got family. Just get over any problems in the past. Forget, forgive, and reach out and to all of your family, because it is important that we stay in touch and that we just remember love is the most important. Love and joy. That's what we need in life.
That's right.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Jamie. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Patsy. Bye.
Okay. Oh, she is so wonderful. And I, as I said, I like her books because of that depth. There's summer reading, there's sort of fluff and you forget it. But she has a depth that, and a quality to her writing that I think you will find really fascinating when you start reading her. So, and that's her new book is Summer Longing. And I was in Provincetown. As a matter of fact, I bought a wonderful, wonderful lithograph from 1853 in Provincetown. We were driving. Now, my husband, absolutely delightful. He gave up about, I think we had been married maybe 5 years when he gave up asking me, why do you want to buy another book? And now, you know, thousands of books later, he understood there was a reason to all of my madness. But we were driving in Provincetown. We were driving down a street, and I saw this sign that said, books. Big. They have all these open old houses and people selling things out in the front yard, like a yard permanent yard sale. And I saw this one that said, books. And so I... within, like in a fraction of a second, he's stepping on the brakes, and I'm jumping out of the car, and I found so many books. But while I was there, I found this wonderful lithograph, 1853. It's quite amazing and very valuable. I found it there, and some of the books I found there, I bought some books for $2 that are really worth $40 or $50 today. So I'm really. I love Provincetown, and if you ever get a chance to be up in Cape Cod area, you have to go there. And I packed a very big suitcase when we went to Cape Cod, and I my oldest son was very young at the time and was still in diapers, and we took this extra suitcase filled with diapers, and I didn't tell my husband I filled it with books, and so on the way. When we were ready to leave, he thought it was an empty suitcase, and he grabbed it and nearly pulled his back out because I had filled it with books. But he didn't mind. He didn't mind. He knew that I needed my books. And, you know, so I wanted to tell you, everybody out there, wear your mask and do this social distancing, because my husband went in the hospital during this horrible stuff for a kidney stone. And so, you know, it's terrible for everybody when you can't go in to the hospital to visit somebody who's in the hospital. So wear your mask. Please wear your masks and take care and be careful. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you try. So start writing today. A page a day, boom, you'll have a novel in a year. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody in the studio today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. He looks so handsome. I love to see him there behind the window. And he saluted me, and I salute him. And thank you, Ed, for keeping this ship going here at Tantalk Radio Network. Oh, it's so exciting to be back. I love it. Bye-bye now, everybody. Take care and social distance.